Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 3 out of 4 Iowans believe the state's mental health system is in crisis or a big problem. This hour, we want to examine mental health services here in the state of Iowa. A little later, we'll have some professional perspectives on this, and we'd like to have you join our conversation. Perhaps you or a loved one have turned to Iowa's mental health care system for help. Were you satisfied? Tell us about your experience. 1-866-780-9100. Some professional perspectives, as I said, a little bit later. But let's start off with Carrie Clogg. Carrie is with us from Des Moines. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
You are a NAMI Iowa board member, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You are also the parent of a child with mental illness there in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your story there. You have a 10-year-old who's faced some mental health issues. So what would you like to tell us about those challenges?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to join you today. I have a 10-year-old son, and he was diagnosed about a year or so ago with bipolar disorder. He also has ADHD and an anxiety disorder. He's had several different mental health diagnoses since he was about 4 or 5 years old, but we recently were able to get a diagnosis for him of bipolar disorder. So we've been involved in the mental health system here in Iowa for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about navigating that over the past 5 years. Said the first symptoms, what did you have as indications, the first symptoms that appeared that were concerning?
Sure. Well, it started with a preschool conference, and instead of discussing, drawings that Sam had done of his family, we were talking about how he couldn't sit still, how he couldn't concentrate. And the first course of action that I took as a parent was to call my pediatrician. That was the natural thing to do, and took him in. And I was really shocked and surprised. My pediatrician, who is a wonderful physician, looked at me and said, unlike heart disease or issues with sight or hearing, I don't have a direct answer for you or a direct path for you to take to help your son with what's going on. And that was really my first realization that this was going to be unlike any sort of journey that I had ever been on as a parent. And it was also the realization that I was going to have to drive the bus. Mm. I was going to have to be an advocate. I was going to have to step in and make somewhat medical decisions for my son because of access reasons and because, in the school setting, there's not a lot of training or understanding or experience in dealing with sophisticated mental health diagnoses in children. So it really was the start of a journey. But, we immediately started therapy with him at a young age and went through a couple different therapy options. He was medicated probably when he was 5 or 6 years old. ADHD was his first diagnosis. But as his symptoms and issues progressed, it became more and more important for us as a family to have him seen by a child psychiatrist. And what I don't think a lot of people know is in Iowa, there is not access to child psychiatrists the way there's access to specialists in other sort of sophisticated disorders.
When you say access, meaning they're just not there, they're not available, or you can't afford them, or your health insurance doesn't pay for them, or what?
Sure, a little of everything, and it differs case by case, of course. But for us, I started going down the list in Des Moines and making calls, and you're told there's a 6-month waiting process. In fact, my son was actually inpatient hospitalized when he was about 8, and the treating child psychiatrist at my discharge, I was told I wouldn't be seeing him for about 6 to 8 months because of his schedule and availability. And to me, that just was not okay.
Mm-hmm. How is Sam doing these days?
He's doing great. And really, it's because we were able to get that diagnosis. Bipolar disorder is it's a very sophisticated diagnosis and one they make very, very carefully in children. But we actually, after some issues with medications and a severe reaction to a medication, I was determined that my child would see someone with a specialty in this disorder. So we actually go to Chicago for his treatment of the bipolar disorder and see a doctor that has a specialty in this disorder. And she does work hand in hand with his therapist here in Des Moines, and we're very thankful for that. But I am always, when I travel with my son, I'm thinking of the kids who are still sitting in the classroom mm-hmm. who are not getting treatment, are not getting help, are not getting diagnosis. Teachers may or may not know what to be looking for, primary health doctors and or pediatricians, and just the stigma with mental health.
Right. And kids who don't have a mom like Carrie, like you, Carrie, who you were persistent and saw your way through a lot of hurdles, it looks like, over years to reach a diagnosis and to help Sam with your son with his mental illness. If you just joined us, Carrie Clogg is with us. She's a NAMI Iowa board member, sharing her story. Carrie, you tell it in your own words. I mean, why would a parent share this story on Iowa Public Radio? It's to help, right?
It is. And I call myself an accidental advocate because I really didn't ever want to be an advocate for mental health. It wasn't something I saw as a path for myself. But after living through this experience and going through what my family has gone through and what we deal with on a daily basis, I really am not going to stop talking about this until all children have the sort of access that my son does and are able to receive the treatment and the care and the love and the support that they deserve. Mm-hmm.
Carrie Clogg with us. If you'd like to join us with your story of you or a loved one who turned to the Iowa mental health care system for help and tell us about your experience, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Carrie is with us, joining Carrie and myself. Peggy Huppert is with us, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Iowa, NAMI, Iowa. Peggy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
NAMI, we just want to mention, is a nationwide organization, of course, support groups, educational programs throughout the country. There are 11 local affiliates of NAMI here in Iowa. You heard Carrie's story, Peggy. How common is what she experienced in getting help for her child?
Unfortunately, it's far too common. We don't have enough mental health providers in Iowa across the board, but we definitely do not have enough of in the children's mental health system. We have only 31 child psychiatrists in the entire state, and most of those are in Polk and Johnson. So actually, Carrie's experience, it's probably worse if you live in other parts of the state. There's whole huge chunks of the state with no child psychiatrists at all.
Mm-hmm. Give us an idea of, in any one given year, how many Iowans face mental illness challenges.
Well, 1 in 5 Iowans, just like the rest of the country, will face a behavioral health challenge in any given year. That's a lot of people. That's over. It's in Iowa. We have about a population of 3 million, so that's over 150,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's about 4.5% of the population who live with chronic and serious mental illness, which would be Sam is an example of that. So there's, you know, there's a range, of course. It, you know, there's could be situational depression, mild anxiety, all the way to, you know, very chronic and serious mental illness like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression.
Mm-hmm. Carrie shared her sort of waking up moment with the pediatrician in the kindergarten stage. There, saying, you know, there really isn't a path for you to get help like there are in other illnesses and diseases. Peggy, what is your read on why we make that such a separation between mental health and health of physical health?
Well, there really isn't. And Ann Starr at Orchard Place here in Des Moines says, she likes to say, you know, if your child breaks his leg on the playground, everyone knows what to do. It's a very clear path, you know, what you do with a broken leg. If they're having behavioral health challenges, it's not so clear at all. And there are several reasons for that. One is the continuing stigma. That is definitely a factor. I like to tell people that even the fact that psychiatry is at the bottom of specialties in terms of reimbursement in the healthcare model, there's a good reason why you don't see a lot of shiny, really beautiful mental health centers like cancer centers or heart centers or trauma centers is because mental health is a money loser for providers. So the stigma even exists in the healthcare model.
Mm-hmm. And that is, when it's a loser, it's been placed as a priority there by someone. Is that politicians, lawmakers?
Well, I mean, I hear from medical students who say, or even current doctors who say, I was heavily discouraged in medical school from going into psychiatry because it's difficult and you don't make enough money. So it's very much a lot. And I can't speak to that. I'm guessing that the origins of that are from stigma. The Affordable Care Act raised reimbursements for family care doctors, which is great. That needed to happen. But one of the unintended consequences of that is that a family care doctor can diagnose and treat insomnia by giving a prescription for a medication and receives a higher reimbursement than a psychiatrist who actually tries to get at the root of why someone has insomnia. That's a good illustration of what's wrong within the medical model. But, you know, it's also alive and well in society in general. And people who work with adolescents tell me that there's far less stigma now of someone admitting that they're an addict, that they have a substance abuse problem, than there is to say I have a mental illness.
Carrie Clogg, with your son Sam, is that an issue at school, tackling the stigma problem?
Absolutely. You know, you can't – the broken leg
– How does it exhibit itself, first of all?
Sure. You know, in the earlier stages, disruption, distraction, not being able to concentrate, reactions. So, you know, loud noises would be a problem. So these are things that other kids don't understand what's going on. The teacher may or may not know how to properly address and de-escalate what's going on. And everyone has to be on the same page and it has to be consistent. So again, that's where, you know, a parent and the team has to all work together to make sure, you know, because discipline looks different and peer relationships look different. And then they get, you know, do they get special ed services? Well, sometimes. And then you have to go through the process of that. So that's a whole other navigation piece that is extremely difficult. And then, yes, stigma. It causes other kids to exclude, to not understand. And, you know, as a child, you're developing and you're trying to develop these relationships and you notice.
Okay. Join our conversation. Carrie Clogg is with us, a mother of a child with mental illness, has been diagnosed and is being treated. Peggy Huppert is with us of NAMI, Iowa. If you'd like to join us, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go quickly to the phones to get a couple of experiences. We're asking you to tell us about your experience with Iowa's mental health care system. Brian, you're calling from Clinton. Welcome to the program. What is your experience?
Just recently this year, my son started suffering from auditory hallucinations, and they progressed into visual hallucinations, but not really schizophrenia because he realizes that the hallucinations aren't real. And my understanding is that people with schizophrenia tend to believe that those things are there, those voices are really there. But it took me months to get in to see a psychiatrist, and the only reason I could even get into the one that I saw was because she went from being an inpatient to an outpatient psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
It was a struggle. He went from being a straight-A student to failing everything in a trimester, and we struggled so hard to find somebody that could prescribe the right medicine. And when we started getting medicines, he just went downhill fast because the medicines have side effects.
Right.
And it was a big struggle to get to see somebody.
How old was he when the onset began?
16 years old.
Yeah, and this is I think typical, Peggy, right, for schizophrenia, young people. This is directly right when it can happen, right?
Right. The typical onset for schizophrenia is really actually between 18 and 21. So it often happens during college years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much more prevalent among males than females.
Brian, give us in a nutshell your experience navigating Iowa's healthcare system for your son.
I think that I got very lucky to get in as soon as I could. Like I said, I put in referrals to every psychiatrist in my area, all the way from Clinton to all the way to Iowa City and even out to Des Moines. And I actually got into somebody in Iowa City, and I think she's doing a great job. The medications that he has now, he would have two or three hallucinations in a day. Now he's down to one every 4 or 5 days, and things are getting back on track. But I sure wish we could have done that months sooner.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying different medicines to our local doctor that was able to prescribe those medicines but didn't really have a lot of experience with the situation that he was in. It was just kind of trying one thing after another, and eventually we did give up and wouldn't go back to that particular doctor.
Right. So when I say this Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll from recently that 3/4 of Iowans believe the state's mental health care health system is in crisis or a big problem, Brian, that your experience bears that out.
Yes, I would say that's 100% true, and I sure wish that there was something that I know that it's tough to diagnose this stuff, but if everything could be so much more prevalent, like you say, like a broken leg, I mean, you can put a stent on that or a cast on that. This stuff takes time to fix, and the more time that goes by, the more that person's life is destroyed when they're trying to fix these problems on their own.
Right.
Whether it be self-medicating or not doing anything.
Yes, and so distressing for you as a parent, for any parent with a child with any illness, but mental illness without adequate help there is excruciating. I'm sure you can testify to that, Brian.
You bet. You sure can.
Okay.
I think that things will change, I hope.
Okay. Brian, I imagine it sounds like you're a good advocate material for better mental health care system here in Iowa.
Sure am.
Thank you, Brian, in Clinton, for sharing your
Thank
story.
You.
Let's go to Karen in Ames. Karen, welcome to the program. Tell us
Thank
your
you.
Tell us your angle on the mental health care system in Iowa.
So I think the mental care system needs to figure out a way. We all need to figure out a way on how to remove the stigma, but also work within the school system. My son has ADHD and dyslexia. And it took a long time to figure out what was wrong. The state of Iowa is a non-categorical state, so the schools just look at behaviors. They look at the symptoms, not the actual problem. So we went from ADHD, dyslexia, depression, anxiety, anger, low self-confidence. The schools hire family advocates, but they're not trained in the mental health that we need. So it's very limited, and once a child goes through 1 or 2 years of this, depression and self-confidence and anxiety just gets worse and worse. And it seems like we keep adding to things. So with my son, we were able to find someone in Des Moines and also go to Iowa City because we didn't have any help in Ames for those specific needs.
Mm-hmm. Karen and Ames, thank you very much for sharing your story. Reaching out this hour to get your experiences with the Iowa's mental health care system, 1-866-780-9100. Also joining me, Carrie Klogg and Peggy Huppert of NAMI. Dr. Michael Flom is with us, a clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa, also current president of the American Association of Community Psychiatrists. Dr. Flom, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben.
I don't know how many of the little testimonials. We've had a flood of calls here. asking for people's experiences with the Iowa mental health care system to see if it sort of measures up to this dismal poll rating at 3/4 of Iowans believe that our mental health care system is in crisis or is a big problem. Tell us, how would you evaluate Iowa's mental health care system?
Well, you know, Ben, I have the advantage of not only having worked in the Iowa system for 30 years now, but because of my role in this national organization, I have a fairly good view of the national situation. And I would not want to minimize the problem in Iowa, but I would want to say that this is not just an Iowa problem. This is very much a national problem. I think it's pretty clear that the needs, the mental health needs, are typically not being met. And we are not using the resources that we have most efficiently. And that's true in Iowa, and that's true in most of the country.
Mm-hmm. Not using resources efficiently as we could. Can you give me an example of that, Dr. Flom?
Well, I mean, I think some of your callers have brought that to the attention. The idea that someone who is in a behavioral health crisis, to wait 3 or 4 months to get in to see a psychiatrist for what is often a too short visit, just that's not going to address the problem, right? That we have people who are in need of help right now, and there's an opportunity for help and maybe a willingness that isn't always there, and somehow we've got to figure out a way to make services available where they're needed and when they're needed.
Got about a minute before we go to break. Talk a little bit about funding. Is funding a problem here for mental health care services?
Funding is a problem everywhere for mental health care services. The good news, and I'm happy to talk about this after the break, is that there are opportunities, and I think things are getting better. I think just within the state of Iowa, within the last 5 years, we actually are turning an important corner, and I think funding is allowing some of that, and I'm happy to talk about how I think things are improving.
Okay.
The break.
We'll do that in just a moment. Dr. Michael Flom is with us, president of the American Association of Community Psychiatrists, also clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa. Decades of experience there dealing with Iowans and others with mental health issues. Carrie Clogg is with us, a parent of a child with mental illness in Des Moines. Also Peggy Huppert of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Iowa, NAMI, Iowa, where she's executive director. Join our conversation. Tell us, what was your experience with Iowa's mental health care system? When we come back, we'll also talk about, of course, focus on mental health in the aftermath of the school shootings. As well, we had yesterday President Trump calling for reviving mental institutions. We'll get our guests' views on those in just a moment. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more of River to River in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about mental health services here in Iowa. A recent poll from the Des Moines Register Mediacom, it was an Iowa poll. Nearly 3/4 of Iowans believe the state's mental health care system is in crisis or a big problem. And that was the leading area of concern by far among Iowans, among the 9 choices given to those who were polled. Child welfare services came a distant second. We're talking with Dr. Michael Flom, clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa. He's also president of the American Association of Community Psychiatrists. Also with us, Peggy Huppert, executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, Iowa. And Carrie Clogg, parent of a child with mental illness in the Des Moines area, also a NAMI Iowa board member. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. We want to get back to the callers in just a bit, but I want to follow up on Dr. Flom's point here. Perhaps bright spots in this, according to the poll, dismal picture overall of parents and others trying to find mental health care when those needs arise for their children and otherwise. Dr. Flom, you talked about opportunities a few minutes ago and turning a corner. I think you used the phrase. Elaborate on what you mean. What is happening that gives you some hope here?
Well, so the last time that mental health surfaced to the Iowa legislature priority was, I believe, in the 2012 legislative season. And very significant legislation was passed that actually is starting to change things. So one thing that came out of that was a recognition that when people need help, just like I was talking about before the break, they can't wait 3 to 4 months to get it.
Mm-hmm.
They need it at that time. And so there was really a mandate at the state level that we develop a meaningful crisis response system. And I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but something that exists throughout most of the state of Iowa today that didn't exist at all before this legislation, if a person is in crisis, they feel like they are hitting the wall, things aren't going well, they're having problems, they're struggling, whether they have a diagnosed mental illness or not, and they are just getting to that point where they think they can't go on. They're going to explode. Something terrible is going to happen if they don't get help right away. You can now pick up a phone and call an Iowa helpline and not just talk to someone at the end of the phone, but within an hour, a mental health professional, if you want, will show up wherever you are, and person to person will start helping you deal with that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And transport you to where maybe somewhere where you can get help. That's a big advance, and that didn't exist 5 years ago.
Peggy Huppert, let me get your view on that. Is do you see that as a step forward for the people you're involved with at NAMI?
Well, definitely, but I hate to throw cold water on it, but I mean, our experience is that is just not true across the entire state. We have 14 regions now responsible for adult mental health. And ostensibly, they all offer the same core services, and then there are core plus or optional services. There still is quite a wide variation between the regions and what is offered. And in fact, there's a bill, actually a couple of bills in the Iowa legislature this session to try to add to that and make more of the services required. And also, one of the things we're looking at is having a statewide crisis number so that anyone in the state, anywhere, can call the same number and receive help for adults or children, because children are not part of the regional system. So the crisis lines do exist, but they're by region, and a lot of people don't understand what region they reside in, and they don't know the number to call.
So, Ben, I'll just clarify. I agree with what Peggy just said, for sure. I am talking about, changes in trajectory.
Uh-huh.
And there is no question that this thing hasn't been worked out, and it's not fully and it's not smooth. But it is a change in the overall trajectory, building a meaningful crisis intervention system statewide. Doing so is probably going to take quite a while. But the fact that we are on that path, in my view, is important.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
And the other significant piece is that we are now starting to talk about, okay, so where does that, so if the person's in crisis, where do they go? And, you know, one thing that has really troubled me over the years is this idea that you go to a hospital. And that is often not the best place to go. So one of the exciting things that's going on is there's a lot of energy now going to the idea of building non-hospital-based locations that we in eastern Iowa are calling access centers, where people can go to get plugged into the services they need, maybe stay for a couple of days while they're figuring out what's going on.
And is there adequate funding for these new type of places?
You know, we're putting the funding together, but here in Johnson County, Johnson County has committed several million dollars this fiscal year to developing such an access center, along with the municipalities of Iowa City and several of the surrounding municipalities. Iowa County is kicking in for this. And this is happening, as Peggy says, in different ways across the state. But overall, the development of these kinds of centers, and especially one right here in Johnson County, in my view, is a very important step.
Yeah, and Johnson County is way ahead of the curve, and I applaud them for that. They're doing some terrific work. But that is part of the complex needs work group recommendation, is to establish six, we're calling them access centers, across the state, so that no Iowan is more than a 90-minute drive. These would be 24/7 secure, no eject, no reject facilities where law enforcement or family members could bring someone who's in crisis.
Okay. Peggy Huppert is with us of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, Iowa. Dr. Michael Flom of the University of Iowa, clinical professor of psychiatry, also president of the American Association of Community Psychiatrists. If you just joined us, just reminding you of who's with us, also Carrie Clogg, the parent of a child with mental illness in Des Moines, who shared her story a little bit earlier in the hour. I wanted to change gears and get your reactions to the political climate that we're in, insofar, this is not a conversation about politics, but insofar it affects the perceptions or perhaps misperceptions of our mental health system. To kind of capture this, I wanted to have you react to an audio montage of some of the voices from the gun debate focusing on mental health over the last couple of weeks. This is taken from a New York Times podcast, The Daily, a few days ago. Let's listen to this minute or so of voices.
I don't believe that this insane monster should have ever been able to obtain a firearm. Ever. I do not think that he should have gotten his hands on any kind of weapon. That's number one. This individual was nuts.
We don't know right now exactly why this deranged individual did this.
Crazy madman bent on evil.
And a wacko came in and shot the five of them.
Who were shot by this madman.
They're homicidal maniacs.
People like this with mental health issues.
This troubled young man fell through the cracks.
The failure of America's mental health system.
This is a mental health problem.
There is a mental health epidemic here, which is being confused for a gun problem.
Again, this is a mental health issue. This is not a gun issue.
The common theme with these kinds of shootings is mental illness, and this is something that we should not be ignoring.
Let me turn to you, Dr. Michael Flom. First of all, how has the political discussion shaped or perhaps distorted the picture of mental illness and mental health in this country?
Well, Ben, this is a really difficult issue for me because, you know, my whole career I've been advocating to enhance mental health services. So, of course, when there is a focus on the need to do so, I am glad about that. On the other hand, I can't tell you how concerned I am about this angle that fixing the mental health system is going to completely ameliorate these kinds of horrific but rare events. I would suggest to you that if we had the best mental health system imaginable, we could not guarantee that these kinds of rare events wouldn't happen. And I have real concerns that what is going on right now is going to take us in a very serious direction backward toward re-stigmatizing. We've made some real progress in destigmatizing. And this idea that, we better lock everybody with a mental illness up in some faraway institution so that these kinds of things won't happen, I think that is a very, very misguided and very dangerous assumption.
Mm-hmm. Peggy Huppert, your reaction.
Absolutely agree. Not everyone who is a mass killer is mentally ill. I know some people think that they, kind of the layperson's definition of mental illness, which is they're not right in the head, kind of a thing.
You can recognize it from a mile away, which is not true either.
No, it's not. And actually, most of the young, and it's almost all men, young men who have committed these atrocities over the last few years did not have a diagnosed mental illness.
How would we could characterize them as not mentally ill, but intensely angry?
Intensely angry, antisocial.
Isolated, perhaps.
Right. All those things. That does not equate to being, you know, having a mental illness. But beyond that, you know, people with serious mental illness are 10 times more likely to be the victim of a crime than the perpetrator of a crime. And it's really distressing to those of us who work on this every day to hear comments like crazy and that the problem is crazy people. And as the doctor said, they should just be locked up and we should go back to institutionalizing. That's absolutely the wrong direction and the wrong way to be talking about this.
Let's, as we conclude this hour, we have a few minutes left. Rick Schultz is with us as well, Administrator of Mental Health and Disability Services for the Department of Human Services here in Iowa. Rick Schultz, welcome to the program.
Thank you, man.
So the picture that we've been getting, and I want to see if this squares with you, is some bright spots here, but very uneven. Depending on where you are in the state, you might get what is advancing, progressing, a healthcare system that is getting better. Reactive and quicker in reacting to onset of mental illness, all the way to waiting, putting on a wait list for months. How do you perceive the crisis that is seen, according to this poll, by many Iowans as a real crisis or a big problem?
I reflect on what your guests have already said. I think Iowa has made significant amounts of progress over time. There have been great improvements moving from a 99-county system to a 14-region system, to providing expanded medical coverage, to three new residency programs for psychiatrists in Iowa. So there's been a lot of progress, but there is much more that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. When you hear the words like I played just a few minutes ago, that montage of voices including Ted Cruz and President Trump, does that put pressure, more pressure, on the DHS here in Iowa for mental health services in the state? Is it a positive force? Does it change anything for you?
No, it's not a positive force. I am incredibly proud of the clear and concise advocacy and description of the situation that I just heard from Peggy and Dr. Flom. And I want to second and third their observations. Individuals with mental illness are far more likely to be victims, as Peggy has said, that these instances are very rare. People overgeneralize what they say about mental illness. We need to have an absolute sense of urgency in improving services for people with mental illness, but we don't do it by denigrating people with mental illness, as I've heard. And I challenge you, Ben, to find sound bites that are more objective and more constructive in the world of mental illness, mm-hmm. that can help us better understand what we can do to be successful.
I was being reflective of our current media atmosphere. I think that was the point of that, because we're immersed in that. But I appreciate your comment, Rick Schultz. What are the key hurdles for you as Administrator of Mental Health and Disability Services for the DHS? The key hurdles standing in the way of big improvement in the system.
Well, let me take this opportunity to say we have been given an incredible opportunity just this morning with the House. Having passed the legislation that implements many, if not all, of the recommendations from the Complex Service Needs Work Group. So I'm just pleased to be able to share that with your listeners today, because I just received that by text message a few minutes ago. So I'm very excited about that. Now the hard work begins. Now we have to get organized. We have to address the workforce development issues that you talked about earlier. We have to figure out how we can bring people and bring their interest in working in the field of mental health and build these new services that and expand on them that the regions have already started working on and build them into required services that are available statewide. Mm-hmm. So as I've told anybody that I've had a chance to talk to, we greatly appreciate this legislation. We greatly appreciate the legislature putting this challenge in front of us. And now the hard work begins to implement it.
Wanted to have your reaction, my guest's reaction, to what President Trump said yesterday. I'll play a little bit of it, too. We only have 4 or 5 minutes left, so brief comments and reaction to this. I'll play this clip in the wake of the Florida school shooting earlier this month. President Trump seems to be calling for reopening of mental institutions like the ones in the past. Yesterday, President Trump spoke at the White House, a meeting with 39 of the nation's governors on gun safety. Here's part of what he had to say.
We have to confront the issue, and we have to discuss mental health, and we have to do something about it. You know, in the old days, we had mental institutions. We had a lot of them. And you could nab somebody like this because, you know, they did. They knew something was off. You had to know that. People were calling all over the place. But you used to be able to bring him into a mental institution, and hopefully he gets help or whatever. But he's off the streets. You can't arrest him, I guess, because he hasn't done anything, but you know he's like a boiler ready to explode.
Okay, Rick Schultz, you first, please. What do you think of the president's comments there, harkening back to an earlier era, I would say romanticizing that, perhaps?
Well, yeah, I would think the observation I would make is in the old days. That was the old days before we had very effective outpatient treatment. That was when we were not providing comprehensive support for people in the community. That's when we would not have access to services like assertive community treatment. These are all services that can help people recover successfully from mental illness. And by recover, I mean they live successfully with this chronic disease, just like you would with any other chronic disease.
I would say we
need to continue to build those services.
What about the president's comment? Is this a possible direction that offers also improvement, opening, reviving, quote, mental institutions?
I don't see that happening in the future. I see us building the outpatient side much stronger to be able to respond to these issues and to be successful in responding to them. We need to connect people that need services to them early, as Dr. Flom said, and have early intensive services so that we don't have to escalate to higher levels of service that are less effective and would be much more effective if we could do things early.
Dr. Flom, a minute or so to react to what the president said.
The process of deinstitutionalization began 70 years ago and was interrupted. There was a big shift in this country of taking people from segregating those with mental illness and locking them away, often for their lifetimes, in institutions far away. And that was an extremely positive move to say that's not the way we want to do it. But the infrastructure necessary to support people in the communities really never developed fully. I'm very happy that Iowa has an enlightened group of legislators led by people like Dave Heaton who are helping us to now say, let's get back in the business of building that community-based infrastructure that will support these people. The last thing we want to do is go back 70 years to a day of institutionalization and segregation.
And I would strongly second that. And to our earlier caller, Brian's point about his 16-year-old son, we know so much more now about how the brain works, and we know, for example, that by early intervention for people with schizophrenia when they have their first psychosis, if it's done effectively, it can prevent a lifetime of disability and a lifetime of illness. So there's a lot that we know that we're not acting on just because of lack of resources and lack of knowledge, and we need to up our game and do a better job, not lock people away.
Peggy, let me ask you this also news-related question. I'm reading since the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting a couple weeks ago, there's been an increase, according to reports, of the children being admitted to Florida mental health treatment facilities. Kids are understandably scared, some cases scared of going to school. Do you see anything happening similar to Iowa? Of course, we're absorbing all of the reports of the shootings, not only the one recently in Florida. Do we see more children needing mental health care in the wake of these shootings?
I've not heard that trend, and perhaps one of our other guests have heard something. I would be supportive of children receiving appropriate services if this is raising awareness. I would not be supportive of panicked responses making children feel stigmatized and coerced into being in a situation that they really probably shouldn't be in. Okay. So I think we need to tread very carefully.
Okay, Peggy, yours will have to be the last words. I'm sorry we've run out of time for a very important conversation. A lot of voices, a lot of perspectives this hour. Unfortunately, not enough time to include them all. I apologize to all the callers who didn't make it on with undoubtedly very important points and stories to tell. I want to thank all of our guests, Rick Schultz of the Department of Human Services here in Iowa, Dr. Michael Flom, Peggy Huppert, and Carrie Clogg. We appreciate you all joining this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with help today from Lulu Dewey. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.